This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. In an age of music sampling and virtually limitless digital effects, the Dallas-based band The Polyphonic Spree is an anachronism. 24 musicians on stage playing an array of instruments, including flute, French horn, theremin, and harp, along with guitars, bass, and drums. There's a 9-person choir, and everyone wears flowing white robes. The mix of rock and symphonic music with the visual image of a rousing tent revival meeting has some critics scrambling for ways to pigeonhole the group. One came up with this: they're like the Hare Krishna Jackson 25. Tim DeLauder is the founder and frontman of the Polyphonic Spree. He was a member of the 90s rock band Tripping Daisy. Now DeLauder is taking this unwieldy show on a national tour, and they have an album, The Beginning Stages of the Polyphonic Spree. Here's a cut called It's the Sun. Welcome to Fresh Air.
I'm very, very happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you this. What came first for you when you were conceiving of this band? Did you hear the sound, or did you see this gestalt of a whole choral group dressed in white on the stage?
No, my version is very not as romantic as it seems now. Mine was a lot more linear and unromantic. It was going for a sound that was something that I had been hearing for a long time. I was really inspired as a kid to orchestral pop music, sunny pop music, in the early 70s. Bands that were using symphonic orchestration to be able to do their songs and tell their stories.
And, like what? Like the Association? Or?
Well, the Association and Fifth Dimension and bands like that, Phil Spector sound, Beach Boys, Walt Disney Storybook Records, these things.
Like, yeah, they're all combo.
Well, they're it's kind of the same music. It's really weird. I don't know. As a kid, it was real. I don't know. It's the first thing I ever really bought was that kind of music. First record I ever bought was Beach Baby by the First Class. And it's just this real sunny, up pop, but symphonic orchestration helped to tell the story. It's just, I don't know. And as a kid, I don't know, it just really appealed to me. And so going through my years of becoming a songwriter, I fleshed out guitar, bass, and drums for a long time in my previous band, Tripping Daisy. And then it became like a wishful thinking when I was recording, like, wow, I wish I had a flute at this part instead of this guitar line, or at this crescendo, I wish I had this glissando of a harp playing here. And it was that kind of like wishful thinking back then that I thought, well, you know, one day I'm going to put a band together that's going to have this sound that is appealing for me. It was very self-indulgent putting Polyphonic Spree together. And it's definitely has evolved into something a lot more beautiful than what I had ever anticipated.
You know, there's this very trippy sound to hearing so many voices. It's almost as if, you know, when you sing into a fan and you get the,
oh.
You get that effect?
Yeah, that's funny you brought that up, because that was another inspiration of mine, was the fan. As a kid, I would sing in those fans and do melodies in there, and you could really glide, like, meow! You could really kind of glide the rail of the melody through a fan, and to kind of regenerate that effect, I initially started using effects on my voice in early bands in high school and stuff, because I wanted that kind of effect. And then it got to the point where I would double my vocal, and then sometimes triple and quadruple and add more vocals. And it was, little did I know, I was grooming myself to be able to have a choir. And then it got to the point where I'd like to have 10 people singing, you know, as one, instead of just me and doubling myself. And it all came from that fan that we've all kind of sang in or talked into at one time. It also made a major impression on me.
Well, did you sing in chorus as a kid? And I've got to say, it does remind me of my chorus experience, where we all sang that Coke commercial song.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Oh,
like to I teach sang the world to sing.
Of course, I mean I sang right there with you in the living room. I wasn't with a choir. Never was in choir or sang in school or anything. I did try band, like concert band, and I was played drums, but I pretty much had my own agenda. I started my first band in the third grade, and I was playing drums, and they were actually ice cream buckets I had gotten from Baskin Robbins. I bolted them together to make myself a kit, because I wasn't able to get one from the parents. They weren't embracing the loud, bombastic drum sound yet. So that's where it started, and then vocals came later. I never was in choir, but I, you know, as a kid, I also went to down here in Texas. We used to have these big, like, church revivals, and I think it was the Beverly Hills Baptist Church that used to have them at this Bronco Bowl that we had here in Dallas. And massive big choir, big band, and it was church, but everyone's, you know, singing. It's all about the music, and I'm sure that had an effect as well.
Well, the lyrics are really upbeat in your song. It's all inspirational. It's about hope or recovery. And I'm wondering what was going on in your life when you did start the band, because I know your first band dismantled after the drug overdose of your bandmate, Wes Berggren. So did his death hit you hard, and did that experience somehow contribute, help shape the kind of music that you were hearing in your head?
I definitely, at the time, you don't really, I don't know, I didn't really think about it. I guess I was so in it that I didn't really realize the after effect. But yeah, most definitely, I can look back and totally see. That's it's still something that we're all dealing with Wes being gone. And at that particular time, I was also a father for the first time. My daughter Stella was being born, and it was kind of weird. I was going through the loss of a dear friend, and then the birth of my child, my first child. And so it was a very strange time for me, and a vulnerable time. And lyrically, I think I've always kind of been on the upside, so to speak. I kind of have a blueprint past of having a kind of a positive, this hopeful aspect on things. And I mean, the way I look at it, it's my path, and you better be optimistic if you're going down your own path. So that's the way I tend to look at things.
So you had this idea for this this polyphonic chorus, and I understand your friend booked you a gig even before you had any band members. So how long did you have to get the group together?
Roughly 2 weeks. It was, Well, I'd gotten to the point where once I had named the band, that was the biggest hurdle for me at the beginning was once I decided to do it and go for it, I really couldn't go forth until I had named the sound of what this thing was going to be called. Because at the beginning, that's all I really cared about was the sound. I thought, I can't do it just it won't happen unless I can. It has to be named for me. For some reason, that was a big point. And once I came up with the name, I was like, "That's it." And I just started talking about it.
Well, where did that come from? Where'd the name come
from? The name. Oh, this is kind of funny. I collected these stickers called Wacky Packages. I'm sure a lot of kids out
the
there.
The bane of my youth.
That's like, exactly.
That's like the 70s equivalent of Garbage Pail Kids, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. This was what I used to blow my lunch money on every morning before school. And so I have every single one of them that they ever made. And
just for people who don't remember what these are, can you give some examples that if you're a collector.
There were these wonderful stickers that came out that mocked consumer products. Instead of Tide detergent, it was Toad detergent, and it looked just like the product, but it was spelled into the joke of what they decided to name that one as. And wonderful artwork on there. And anyway, it came with two stickers and a bubble gum and a card, and they were 5 cents. And I loved them, and so we traded them all the time. Anyway, I've got an uncut sheet of these things, and
collector's item. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually have two of them, but this particular one, I just had it framed, and it was kind of leaning against the wall in the bedroom, and I'm trying to think of the name, and I hadn't come up with anything yet, nothing, not even a working title or anything for the name of the band, but I thought, I'm trying to think, and I'm standing in the bedroom, and it's kind of dark in there. The only light that's coming in there is from in there in the, kitchen spilling in there. And it's kind of like gracing this picture I just had framed. And I just kind of casually glanced it. And I caught the word poly. And it was off one of the stickers for polydent denture adhesive. And it had a parrot on there for Polly wanted a cracker or something like that. And I just saw the word Polly, and I said the polyphonic spree. And I thought for a second, oh my gosh, man, the polyphonic spree. Oh my goodness. And my wife is in there on the computer, and she goes, "What'd you say?" And I said, "The polyphonic spree." And she goes, she's quiet, she goes, "I like it." And I go, "This is it. Oh, my gosh." I started running around the room screaming, "Oh, got it, man." It just hit me. It was so warm, and just that was it. And then she was online. She types up domain name to see if she can get it, and we bought it immediately. And that was it. It was the polyphonic spree. And from that moment on, I had everything in my head and knew exactly what I wanted to do. And so got to the point where I was driving my good friend Chris Penn crazy, and my wife, and he said, "Well, I'm going to book you on a show opening for Granddaddy and Bright Eyes at the Gypsy Tea Room here in Dallas." And I said, "I don't know about this." And
those are big bands.
Yeah, well, I go, "I don't even have a band. I don't have a band. I don't have these songs together, and that's in 2 weeks, you know?" And he goes, "You can do it." So that's when we did it, and I went to some close friends and some acquaintances, and I was able to, gather up 13 people, and we did the show.
Where did you find these musicians, and are they classically trained? They seem to be. Are they the kind of classical musicians who are always looking for a way to do something cool and less restrained and less controlled, to rock out?
Yeah, you know what? See, I came from a rock world, and I did not, kind of a rock experimental world, and I just didn't know any of these people that I was seeking, these instruments I was seeking. And I just literally came by them from word of mouth, from my family and friends putting the word out there, and these random people calling. And a lot of them were younger people that were in school, in college playing their instrument, or in high school they played their instrument. A lot of them are classically trained musicians, but it's from college and from high school. None of them were in working orchestras, except for one of them that did it every now and then in El Paso. That's the harp player.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tim DeLauder. He's the frontman and founder of the band The Polyphonic Spree. You might recognize their song "Light and Day," which is currently featured in a Volkswagen ad.
Day is more than you'll say, 'cause all
That's Light and Day, the Polyphonic Spree, led by my guest, Tim DeLauder, founder and lead singer in the band. I want to talk about your stage presence, what a concert is like. First of all, everyone's in these long white robes. You have about, what, 22 members in the band right now?
There's 24 of us now.
You're all on stage, and there's an incredible amount of movement going on. The singers, there's kind of a church choir swaying and dancing thing going on of about 9 or 10 people, and then people playing instruments or dancing all over the place, and you at times are conducting, you're also singing, and you're lifting your arms up to the sky like a messianic leader. How did this performance style evolve? And what did you say to the people in the band about how they should act on stage?
You know, I didn't say anything, and that's the beautiful part that came out of this. Something happened. This wonderful energy has evolved with this group that I don't know, that's extremely contagious for all of us. And once it gets going, it's pretty an amazing event to be a part of.
Well, the thing about the repetition in the music and the chorus and the uplifting nature of it and the white robes, it has such a religious or spiritual impression. In fact, the effect of the band evokes a lot of associations for me. There's that evangelical tent thing going on, and also
right.
It makes me think of Up With People, that patriotic group. And
right.
And a lot of people have pointed out, you know, it feels a little bit like a cultish feeling, reminiscent of Waco or some
right.
kind of white-robed cult. I can't help but wonder if you're playing off of those associations in some way.
I never really thought about how I, you know, when I was telling you, I was thinking of a beautiful image, and I'm thinking of the music. In my mind, I'm putting out this beautiful music, wonderful music, with these people wearing white robes. It's flowing, and it fits the theme of what we're playing. I didn't realize how it might look to other people until press started, you know, talking about it and sensationalizing sometimes and being cynical about the way that we looked in the music. It kind of fit this puzzle for them to say this kind of cultish thing. What's up with these happy singing people wearing white robes from Texas? And I never really thought about that until they brought it up. And I know that sounds kind of weird, I guess, because I was just so in it and thinking about it on a, more of a, the level of what I thought about the music, more of a beautiful aspect, more so than how it looked in a kind of cynical way. And I don't know, it didn't cross my mind. And then it did, and I was going, wow, I guess I can see how they could see that. And then I started to think, well, was this subconsciously? And then I'm going, why did I pick this? I mean, why do I want robes? Why am I singing like this? And then you kind of just go, you start, you know, just trying to think about your past and your life, and you try to, it's almost like therapy. Even when you do interviews, you get questions asked, and you go, well, I want to give them the right answer here. And before you know it, you're going, what is going on here? But it, you know, my grandfather was a preacher and a very charismatic man, and my aunt would thank me right now. She got mad at me for not mentioning that one time. She called me up and she goes, why didn't you mention your grandfather? Don't you remember him practicing his sermon right in front of you and singing and bending his ear over and, you know, and you being in church and watching him up there, you know, preaching to the church? And I'm like, you know. And that I was mesmerized by that. And then also going to the churches here that used to have the music and the choir and everything, it definitely made an impact on me. And I never really thought about it until people started asking me questions, and I had to really start thinking about it, because I was just reacting, you know. I wasn't really going, well, because I was affected by this, I'm going to do this. It's really weird. It took other people to kind of go, well, did you know that you're like this? And did you know what this came from? I'm going, Well, thanks a lot. This was a lot more than just an interview. I know a lot more about myself. Thanks a lot. So I think it has a combination of a lot of different things, and who knows why we do it, but there's definitely paths and different landmarks along your way that you can definitely point at and go, well, I can see that being a big reason why, but I don't know. Strange world.
Well, Tim DeLauder, I really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Tim DeLauder, founder of the Polyphonic Spree. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.